That music was from the movie The Da Vinci Code. It's actually called The Chalice of Royal Blood. It was done by Hans Zimmer. This is BBS Radio, the show Sound Health, and I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. Just a few weeks ago, we announced something on the show about a book called The Tree of Life and the Holy Grail by Sylvia Franck. It's a book written from the perspective of Rudolf Steiner's work, and she can correct me about that if I'm wrong. In the book, The Tree of Life, Sylvia names some of the modern-day Grail mystery keepers. She named Royal Rife, Alfred Tomatis, and Wilhelm Reich, and Sherry Edwards. I was flabbergasted when I read that. The book had originally come into my hands through an Australian bioacoustic practitioner, Pauline Ward. Pauline was with us here for a month doing an intern in our research lab. Pauline is a trained Steiner teacher and trainer in a school, the Steiner School in Melbourne, Australia, and she was thoroughly familiar with Steiner's work. I learned a lot about her, and I was incredibly impressed with Steiner's educational themes that I'd heard from Pauline, but nothing was going to prepare me for what I read in Sylvia's book. Sylvia has a very unique perspective on the ideas of the Holy Grail mysteries. About 2 weeks ago, just on a whim, I started looking on the internet. It was Sunday, and I found Sylvia's phone number and called her, and she answered. Again, I was just astounded. We had a very lovely conversation, and she's a very genuine person, and she agreed to be on the show. She's here with us today. Sylvia, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Sherry. I'm delighted to be with you. It's really beautiful of you to ask me.
Well, we're very honored to have you. I think we need to start with some background of this book first, but feel free to add whatever comes to mind. This is your second book about Tree of Life, isn't it?
Well, it's a rewrite. The initial book came out in 1996, and then the Da Vinci Code happened, and my publisher said to me, could you perhaps update it for the Da Vinci Code? And then I thought, well, there's a lot that needs rewriting. So it took me 2 years to rewrite it, and I've included a lot of new material.
That's incredible. Very well referenced. Because the book is based on Steiner's work and then takes you through the other, can you give us a foundation of Steiner's work? We have an hour, but, you know, could you shorten it up a bit?
Oh, golly. Well, where to begin? Steiner's work is really based on his own spiritual research, which is open to anybody who will take the trouble to do the same spade work for themselves. His basic books are Knowledge of Higher Worlds, which is a sort of Baedeker of the spiritual world. tells you really what you need to begin to research for yourself, and that for every step you take into the unknown, you must take 3 steps to perfect yourself, because obviously you're going on a dangerous journey, and you're going to do all your own research. You don't need a guru. You must do everything for yourself. Then there was occult science, which is his view of everything that, from the beginning of time, as we know it, as he could describe it, describing the evolution of the planet, of the Earth, in 3 previous stages, and then looking forward to 3 further stages. So it's a vast canvas, a huge canvas. And then the philosophy of freedom, which is really indicating that pure thinking is a tool of entry into the spiritual world itself. So if Steiner's work is vast and it's based on his own personal experience in the spiritual world and very carefully mapped out, you need your own compass and you need to know where you're going and how you're going. And also based on total consciousness, not losing consciousness, not drugs, not any other way, but totally conscious.
It it is very vast from every aspect of your life, from architecture to agricultural to education to food. It's awesome, and it's very meaty. There's a lot to it. Even in trying to read one paragraph of a Steiner book, you kind of get lost in the it just brings in so many thoughts and so many directions all at once. It certainly does.
And I'm just a housewife and a mother and a grandmother, and I've been sort of reading these books through my marriage, you know, with small children by swimming pools, with a lot of interruptions going on, trying to hang on to the thoughts. And it's been really, I suppose, nearly 50 years of hard slog, but very, very worth it. Very worth it.
How does the mysteries of the Holy Grail fit into Steiner's work?
It is central to Steiner's work, absolutely central. He speaks of the Holy Grail a great deal. In connection with the research I have done, he connects the Grail itself with the highest reaches of the life force. This is why my book was called The Tree of Life and the Holy Grail, because both of those symbols are very real symbols for what Steiner describes as the higher ethers. And this is where your work comes in, Shari, because the two higher ethers, which are symbolized by the story of in the Garden of Eden, when the Tree of Life was eaten from, when the fruit of the Tree of Knowledge was eaten, the Tree of Life was removed. And these two higher ethers, Steiner also described as the Grail, as the Tree of Life. These are what he describes as the chemical, sound, tone, or number ether, and then the life ether, which is the highest of all. But the chemical ether is really central to what you are doing with your sound work. And it is so exciting because, in a way, the Grail in legend is always something that is removed. It is beyond one's normal everyday life, but it's something that enriches life, but it belongs to a higher region. It is really the pure spiritual world is the Grail castle. So all of these legends of the Grail are really legends that hold realities, truths, and scientific truths, as we're beginning to find, as you already have discovered. This is science, but it's legend as well. It's a strange mixture.
So the Holy Grail is a set of information.
Yes. It's many things, but in the context of the actual biblical story, Christ's blood actually contained the full power of all four ethers. The rest of humanity had lost this power at the fall. But in the whole story of the Passion, the child who was born as Jesus then actually was an individual who had lived at a time before the fall and hadn't incarnated until the time of Jesus. So the child in the Luke Gospel story is an innocent human being who has not incarnated since the fall. So the blood in the body of this child actually held the power of all four ethers, of the full life force, the Tree of Knowledge and the Tree of Life. And therefore, the Grail is also a symbol for this very special blood, which we would have had if the fall hadn't happened.
So the people that you name in your book that are modern keepers of the Grail, Royal Rife, tremendous researcher about pathogens and microscopes and the ability to kill pathogens so we don't have this bird flu stuff going on if we could use his work, and Wilhelm Reich about orgone, Alfred Tomatis, and my work about bringing information in, there's been this popular myth about this as a bloodline, but you're explaining it differently. Can you explain that to our audience? that it's not, you don't feel that it's really a bloodline.
No, it's not. No, it's any human being who relates to the happenings of 2,000 years ago, that the Christ principle itself can gradually transform themselves to the stage when they can hold the Christ, which really is that the human being themselves become a grail, a holder of this sacred energy. And therefore, a bloodline is a very different thing. I think that Steiner speaks about how the original, in ancient times, when you had the priest kings, they became kings because they held very pure blood in their veins. And at that time, in a very ancient time, blood was still a way of accessing the spiritual world, so that if you came of a pure bloodline, in very ancient times, you still could have knowledge of the spiritual world, whereas other mortals didn't retain that ability. So kings were chosen because of the purity of their blood. But then the physical blood really degenerated as time went on, so that by the time of Christ, you really had no longer a very easy access to the spiritual world through the old way. So that the new way is, according to Steiner, is through resonating with that force that is held in the Grail, with these four ethers, which the Christ brought back to the earth at the incarnation. It's a very complicated subject, and one really needs to study it in great length. But it is really that our blood lost a certain quality at what, you know, the Bible describes as the fall, because the higher ethers, the tree of life, the Grail, was removed from our conscious control. The story of the tree of knowledge and the tree of life is that we had conscious control over our thinking, which were the two lower ethers, the light and the warmth ether, which are instrumental in helping people to think. So that you have independent thought through the use and the conscious control of these two lower ethers. But if we had been able to control the two higher ethers, the tree of life, the Grail, if you can imagine a very immature human being having the ability to think of a being, and not only to think of a being, but bring that being into physical manifestation. So, for example, when an architect is designing a building, he is using the power of the light and the warmth ether, the tree of knowledge, and he is able to think a building. Then he begins to use the tree of life when he draws the building, because the chemical ether, which is the lower of the two higher ethers, is to do with the distances between things, differentiation. So when you have two notes in a scale, the distances between the two notes, or if you have two levels in a piece of sculpture or a piece of architecture, the distance between those two levels really is passing information, as you know very, very well with your signature sounds. So that in a picture or a piece of music, you are beginning to create into matter. And then with the life ether, the highest of all, you actually manifest this creation in matter. Does that make sense to you, Sherry?
It does, and it makes a whole lot of sense to me personally, because one of the things that I did, this is kind of backward science to me, I sort of stumbled onto things because of my talent about hearing sounds from people. And when you talk about the distance between the notes, that's exactly how we use the frequencies, and that's where other people that follow us don't pay attention to that void that's there, that the mind brings that together and fills in the gap.
That's brilliant. Absolutely. And also, the chemical ether is connected to the fluid state, to water, and it's also connected to emotions. And what I, this is my own little bit of research, I feel that when a painter is using different tones of color, or when a musician is using his different tones in music, or if an actor is actually speaking on the stage, the actual interval between one note in his voice and the other, and with a painter, and with a sculptor, all of these intervals between levels, between notes in the voice, and between notes in music, I believe are almost like a real kind of recording of the person who is creating, of their emotions, so that when the observer or the listener or the member of the audience hears that interval between the notes, or the person in an art gallery sees the intervals between the color tones, they have an exact replica of the emotion of the artist when he created that. Do you understand me?
Absolutely. That's what we've seen in all this research. When we give people two frequencies together, it creates an excitement in the body that allows it to animate, and I think go back to the originating DNA. It's kind of like this is a pathway, and the void coming together really is what dictates it. You know, reading your book, but it certainly explained my sanity, or insanity, as you want to look at it. I didn't understand how in doing this healing stuff with people, with frequencies, I would see images, and I would know things that I didn't know. It's like I was tapped into some system that everybody else couldn't hear. And people would ask me a question, and I wouldn't know the answer consciously, but I would hear my mouth say the answer, and I would think, like separate, I would think, oh, I gotta write that down, I didn't know that before. So yeah. It's like some channel of information coming through, and it was so exciting to see this explained and how this is happening and where this is coming from in attachment to the earth and the ethers, and it's just like I got a radio here and I just kind of accidentally tuned into the station and it works.
Oh gosh. No, it is so exciting for me, Sherry, because I've been struggling with this. I mean, as with you, I didn't start off life looking for this. It just hit me. It came to me. I didn't go looking for it. And I was just researching and researching and then following another lead and another lead and finding things in Steiner that really corroborated ideas I'd had. So I was just grasping ideas from different places, and then I would open books and they would just have the right piece of information that I needed. It's been quite unbelievable.
And then you look at it and you say, oh, this is a whole package. Good grief. How did I manage that?
I know, exactly. Exactly.
This is work. One of the things that keeps coming up in my work is the way the formulas are configured. It comes out in a Maltese cross. Have you run across that as a piece of this ancient knowledge and healing?
I think the Maltese cross has come up, interestingly enough, in the crop circle phenomena. The cross symbol is a very ancient symbol. I haven't in my own research, but I, you know, for example, the Templar cross is sort of fairly similar, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The splayed cross.
Well, the geometry of that cross is exactly how people use frequencies in their body to reestablish their DNA.
Yes, no, that is wonderful.
And
also, I've been working recently with a young English scientist, Dr. Vanessa Hill, who's been working with geometric shapes. And she can already see with what I'm coming up with that there are corroborations with what she's doing. So I find it fascinating tie-ups. And I sort of feel it's like a huge jigsaw puzzle. And the pieces are beginning to come together and make a complete picture across the work of several people.
Well, the system is there for how to tie into your physical structure, how to tie into your processing, to your emotions, to your genetics. It's all in the formulas, and we've tried them here at the Research Center. They work. We had a guy the other night that just came in after hours, had a big golf ball-sized lump on his side of his face. He had an abscessed tooth, and we knew how to work with that. It took us about 20 minutes. You could almost watch that big swelling go down. We were all in shock.
Yes.
But I think with these keys that are coming together, we each have a piece of the information, and I think we're going to dump it all on you, and you're going to have a new book.
Oh, you are lovely. Well, I've been so hoping to hear more of your work, you know, in the years between my first book in 96 and recently, and I thought I really must get back and find out what Shelley's doing, because I was so excited when I found your work. I can't tell you how excited I was. In fact, I must tell you a quick, wonderful story. I had a great friend who went out to the States with his wife. He's quite elderly. And he came back from the States, and I was longing to tell him about your work. And he said, no, I want to tell you about something that happened to me in the States. I said, no, I want to tell you this thing, you know, that's happened to me. And we had an argument about who was going to tell the important piece of news first. And the piece of news he had to tell me was the same piece of news I had to tell him, was that he'd met you at a conference. And I said, well, I was just about to tell you about Shari Edwards myself.
So all of the intertwined weavings of how we connect, all of that's in the math of the body, too. There is this wonderful math matrix, and we've just taken the medicine side of it. I'm doing a new article. Maybe it'll be a book. Math is medicine. And I just think this is an incredible connection. I just thank you for being on the planet. And we're having a great time here, but I've got some questions I want to ask. One is, in the transformation that you're talking about, that people can touch into this, it doesn't take a special bloodline. Do you talk about that in your book?
Yes, of course. I mean, I give the basic tools as far as I can, because I'm just a very ordinary person. I'm not, you know, I'm a housewife, I'm a mother and a grandmother, and therefore I don't have perhaps as much time as other people would have to study all these things. But I try to give the history of the Earth through Steiner's descriptions, to link that in with the ethers and the development of the ethers, to link that up with the whole question of esoteric Christianity, because in the Da Vinci Code and in Holy Blood, Holy Grail, they're just looking at one side of it, and they speak about this underground stream of knowledge, but there really is an underground stream of knowledge, but it's been hidden because there were so many enemies to esoteric Christianity through history, that this knowledge had to be kept very, very quiet. So it went from the ancient mysteries, then through the Cathar heresy, through the Knights Templar, the Rosicrucians, and then it sort of went underground a bit until Theosophy and Rudolf Steiner's Anthroposophy really brought it back to the light of day. So it's following the whole thread of esoteric Christianity, which is esoteric knowledge in a Western form, and describing this history and describing the beliefs of this history. I'm also linking up with the most amazing woman, Joy Hancox, who rediscovered the original designs for Shakespeare's playhouses in London. Those date back to the 16th century. And the discovery that these were built on Kabbalistic and Hermetic principles, and that all these things we're talking about now was known then, but couldn't be developed because of the political and religious climate of the time. But all this knowledge is again surfacing, and Joy is passionate about this collection. This is a book well worth reading, the Byron collection, and then another book, Kingdom for a Stage, all about what the group around Shakespeare was actually doing. They were actually a group of Rosicrucians, and John Dee was responsible. He was one of the design people who designed these Elizabethan playhouses, which were far more than mere theatres. So there is so much information in my book that some people say there's too much, but I've just tried to put everything in it that will really bring people along this path to understanding the science of the Grail, which is what you are working with. That religion isn't just something for Sunday, it's science as well. It's
absolutely
art and science combined with religion. And that fairy tales aren't just things for children or legends. They are the substance. They hold the substance of reality, the substance of truths that have been forgotten by us. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I like to hear you say we just forgot, and it's in there somewhere, and we can bring it back. In my own case, it started with a very esoteric talent of being able to hear these sounds, and then we worked it to science. So we are accused of being too scientific by some and too esoteric by some, but the truth is we have a foot in each house.
Absolutely. And Sherry, it's holding that balance. It's keeping one's feet firmly on the ground and not going too far into the, you know, to the intellectual, to keep the emotional, to keep the artistic and the scientific and the clear thinking all in balance. This is, balance is everything, I think, in this. But it's so exciting because what used to be considered, what people traditionally think of as religion that is just kept for a certain time of day or a certain time of the week, it's life. And Steiner actually describes in some of his lectures how in the ancient mystery centers where people had to be initiated and had to go through terrible trials to really earn, to learn these truths, there were certain secrets that they weren't allowed to bring into the outside world. And one of these was knowledge of algebra. So that things that are now taught in school were originally mystery knowledge. So in the same way, esoteric knowledge will one day become science.
Well, I think in the case of our work, it's moving fast in that direction. Is there a website where people can get in touch with you?
Not yet. No, I must create one. Bless
okay.
you. Thank you. I will make myself a website or get one made for me.
Well, there's an intriguing statement about your book, that it provides the solution to a riddle of the sudden wealth and strange behavior of some of the people associated with the, I think it's Rennes Le Chateau. Don't give it all away, but could you give us a bit enough to intrigue people to want to go buy your book?
Yes. Well, this, again, I just came across this completely by accident, and strangely enough, through sound. The clue was when I was reading a book on the Westminster pavement, and it said something about reversing one's sound, and I thought, well, that's got to do with building up the body. I must have been reading all your work at the time. Anyway, another clue is that in the so-called clues that were in the parchments, which I believe that a lot of the material that was found to do with Rennes Le Chateau was actually concocted by someone and put in the public domain because certain groups wanted more information than they had, and they thought if they put sort of red herrings about, somebody would know. If they put half-truths, somebody would know what those half-truths meant, and if they were people who really had knowledge, they would put their hands up and say, oh, I know the answer to that question. And then these people would find out more than they already knew, if you see what I mean. It's sort of, you know, putting out a great big trawling net to catch all the information they could. But in the parchments, one of the things that is said is, this treasure belongs to Zion, and he is there dead. And in French, it is ce trésor, something, Zion, et il est la mort. And I thought to myself, it's not this treasure belongs to Zion and he is there dead. This treasure belongs to Zion and it is death. So I believe it's the power over death. It's actually artificially gaining more life a longer lease of life than you were going to have. And I, by some strange coincidence, was reading some Steiner lectures, had no intention of finding out what the mystery of Wren was, and I discovered that he said there were certain occult groups around about the time he was alive who were trying to gain what he called an Ahrimanic immortality. That was a sort of artificial immortality. And this exactly fitted the picture that I was beginning to gain of what the priest had been up to. And then a few months later, I looked at the date of the lecture, and I saw that this lecture that Steiner gave was actually at the time that Sonia died. It was January 1917 that Steiner had broken off his lectures on the 15th of January. Sonia had had his stroke or epileptic fit or whatever it's been described in different ways on the 17th of January, which was this mysterious date to do with the whole Wren mystery. And then he died on, I think, the 22nd of January, which was around the time when Steiner gave the lecture. And Steiner was very known. If he knew there was something dodgy or dangerous going on, he would actually expose it. He would give a lecture talking about something similar to the thing he was worrying about. And apparently French anthroposophists actually went to see Steiner on the 15th of January and stayed with him, and he broke the whole lecture course, which was actually about the effect, the causes of the First World War. And when he went back to speak, he spoke about this Ahrimanic immortality, which is precisely what I thought Sonia was up to, the priest in the Holy Blood, Holy Grail. So I think that this may have some connection. Also, a month before my book came out, a book came out by Patrice Chaplin, who was Charlie Chaplin's daughter-in-law. She was married to Michael Chaplin, about a city in Spain called Girona, and she believed that certain ceremonies were being carried out near that city, and they were connected to knowledge that Sonia had. So her book has actually corroborated mine, but I brought this idea out already in 1996 in my initial publication. So, sorry, I've gone on a bit long about it. It's a very deep subject, but I believe I also have a chapter on the human double, and this is the sort of doppelganger figure, and I think this also relates to the whole mystery.
Well, it certainly fits into the research that we're doing here. Now, I have been really pushed this last year to do all of the frequencies about anti-aging and cells and cell death, and we've got a good handle on that now about cells. I have other questions here. This is one from somebody who knew you were going to be on the show, and they want to know what you thought of The Da Vinci Code and other movies like The National Treasure.
The National Treasure I haven't seen. The Da Vinci Code, I thought as a movie it was a bit disappointing. I enjoyed the book enormously as an exciting thriller, and I actually was stuck on Gatwick Airport for 3 hours. My plane was delayed, and I was so thrilled because I could keep turning pages. It's a very good page turner. I think Dan Brown knows a lot more than one realizes, particularly his chapter 72, I think it is, which is all about iambic pentameter, which again relates to Joy's work, because the playhouses in London, the Elizabethan playhouses, were based on a grid of 72, on a square of 72. So this number comes up very much in the geometry of those playhouses. So I think Dan Brown knew, maybe he read Joy's books, I don't know, but he knew a lot about that. But I think if it gets people interested in esoteric Christianity, if it gets people to look up what the Cathars and the Templars and the Rosicrucians were really about, then I think it's done a good job. But it's not not the real McCoy, but as a popular book, I feel it's resonated with people. People know that there is more than they have so far come across in traditional religion and history. And therefore, if it's made people resonate to something deeper and has made people dig about and find out more, then it's done a good job.
Why do you think we're so fascinated with this idea that there's some mystery that explains our existence? And in doing some research, I found that people like Sir Isaac Newton and Einstein and other people looked for codes in the Bible, and while there is a Bible code out now, but why are we so fascinated that there's some secret knowledge that explains our existence?
Because I think we're not altogether satisfied with what the scientists have told us. And we think, I'm sure people feel that deep down inside them they know the real story, which they probably do.
So we just want more explanation of how to run this machine that we are, and we don't really know the perfect way to keep it in good running order.
Absolutely. And if you think of modern medicine in terms of Steiner's knowledge and the knowledge you have, we don't just have a physical body. We have an etheric body, which is our life body. We have an astral body, which interpenetrates the life body, which brings the information through from the cosmos. It works through into the chemical ether. And at night, we expand into the cosmos until we contain the whole cosmos within ourselves. And all these sounds, all these cosmic sounds, the music of the spheres, is sounding through our being at night, because we are in the cosmos, we are expanded throughout where these sounds are coming from. Therefore, true health has to be maintained by the sort of methods you are using, by knowledge that takes in the fact that we are not just a physical body, we're not just a conglomeration of atoms, that there is far more of us to be treated, not just the physical, but the etheric, the astral, and then finally, that there is an eternal being inside us, our eternal spirit, which holds this whole lot together, and which has the power to bring health right through into the physical body, if the individual is determined enough and strong enough. I mean, there's this story about the Frenchman in the Second War, who was left for dead. I think he had every illness and every possible, he was blind, I forget his name. And he sort of astral projected out of himself, and he looked down. He should have been dead, but he could see life in his body. And he returned and he lived. Now that man should have died, but he didn't. And so many people really get through the most terrible illnesses because of the strength of their eternal spirit, their ego, their unquenchable, everlasting self, which holds all these subtle bodies together with the physical. I mean, Shari, it's such a huge subject. I just don't want to sort of rush people into too much knowledge. As long as it all resonates with somebody, that's the main thing.
Do you think there's any kind of special preparation for us to open ourselves to this stream?
I think that more and more, that every young generation that comes up now is more and more tuned to this knowledge as a natural birthright. Steiner speaks about how all of this sort of awareness faded about 4,000 years ago. An innocent state then. We didn't have independent knowledge. We didn't have the ability to think in the modern way. Now we come back to the knowledge with our integrity as thinking human beings, and we are now able to use freedom of thought, this free thinking that Steiner speaks about the book, The Philosophy of Freedom, or the philo- he speaks about how thought itself takes you into the spiritual world. And you find many, many people I've found who know nothing about Steiner at all have come to me with these sort of thoughts out of themselves. So I think it's a natural birthright of more and more people coming to this planet to really know how to access this knowledge, not through drugs, not through going into trances, not with a guru, but through their own common sense and following what is resonating within themselves.
We have a way to teach people to jump in or to sort of ooze into that stream. We teach them to use their own sounds that are coming out of their ear, their otoacoustic emission. And there's an article online on our site that they could use. It's called If You Can Moan, You Can Tone. And that's on the site Nutrasounds, N-U-T-R-A, sounds, plural.com. And one of the exciting things I found about this is when we went to Machu Picchu in Peru, they had one place there that they said was the swimming hole. It's just kind of a cut out of the mountain where they thought this used to be a swimming pool. It's kind of shaped like one. But when you sit there, it causes your own signature sound, your own body sound, to become so loud, and you can hear it in a way that I've never been able to hear it, that it's like the whole valley in front of you is echoing your sound back. And boy, it just put me in an altered state just almost immediately. And I'm seeing the people that were walking around there hundreds of years ago, and the knowledge just started pouring in, and it was an awesome experience. We ought to go back and do that again.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, one of the things I do speak about at the end of the book, Sherry, is this is something that I found so exciting. There was a television program way back in the 60s. It was an anthroposophist who made a beautiful program called In Praise of the Stork. And it is that the whole voice box is shaped like the wings of a dove. And it's the dove that, you know, the stork who lands with his feet in the water and brings the children, brings the babies. And then if you go down to the womb has the same configuration as our organs of speech. And Steiner speaks about the lost word, which is something that the Masons speak about. And this is that in the beginning, all human beings were one gender. We were all female. And then man happened after woman, according to Steiner, not the other way around. And that in the future, there will be one gender again. In the beginning, the female wasn't the female as we know her, but was a sort of androgynous being. But in the future, there will be a future androgyny, which will be a male androgyny, and human beings will create human beings through their sounds, through our voices, so that new beings will come into creation through the human voice. So no longer the womb, it's the same configuration as the organs of speech, that the womb will become obsolete, and the actual organs of speech will create the new human being. And that is the lost word.
And so to create by singing, by thinking, by bringing all of this stream together, ooh, awesome thought. I have another audience question here. I recently saw a reverse image of the Last Supper in which two Knights Templar sat at each end of the table. Have you seen this, and what does the Knights Templar have to do with all of this?
Oh, wow. I haven't seen it, but the Knights Templar are enormously significant. There is a new book come out from Steiner Press on the Knights Templar, and a friend of mine has written the introduction. She's absolutely crazy about the Knights Templar, and I'm very enthusiastic about them. They had amazing inner knowledge, and according to Steiner, there was this inner group who had a purity beyond any purity we could ever imagine. they understood, I'm sure they understood the whole secret of the tree of life. The actual overcoming of the sexual urges, I think, really has to do with this future creation through sound, through the voice, because the whole sexual thing really is where these higher ethers have been sort of put down to a level below the one they should have been, so that it's been misused. But it had to go through that stage. But in the future, we will create through sound. And the Templars, I think, had enormous knowledge of sound. If you go to Roslyn Chapel in Scotland, which is where the Da Vinci Code ends, the arches, there are these arches with actual cymatic notes, the actual cymatic symbols in the these musical notes which have been carved into the arches. And I think recently it was on a website, they played the music that had been etched into the, you know, the cymatic indications of the different notes, which was apparently very beautiful. And I think the Templars had enormous knowledge, and they've been just so badly, well, they've had such bad press recently, but they had very, very high esoteric secrets that they held. And there was an inner group, and the whole business of their arrest and the torture and the confessions they were supposed to have been given, I think the Vatican has recently said that they have not admitted to the things that they were accused of. But Steiner also speaks about how when they were tortured, that they were put through such terrible experiences that they admitted to things they hadn't done because of the extremity of their torture. I mean, it's a very complicated subject, the whole business of the Templars, but I believe that they understood the mystery of earth energy, which is another manifestation of the four ethers when you live over a very powerful area like Rennes Le Chateau. Jerusalem is very powerful. There are these sacred places on the earth. I have put in my book about how the human blood corpuscle has eight layers, and so has the earth in etheric layers, so has the blood corpuscle in etheric layers, and that if you work inwardly, if you do meditational work and you really meditate on something very profound, you can affect your blood. And that this affecting of your blood actually has a resonating effect on the eight layers of the earth beneath your feet. And I think, this is just my own idea, is that when the Templars settled in various places, they very often settled in incredibly powerful areas of the earth. They were all the way along the Mediterranean. And if you think the Mediterranean is the edge of the north, of the South European tectonic plate and the North African tectonic plates. And where you have these cracks in the earth, you have volcanoes, as in the case of Sicily, and you've got Etna and Stromboli. You have these settlements of Templars, the Knights of Malta. They were all along the Mediterranean, and in Britain, they certainly sited themselves over very powerful earth energy spots. Rennes Le Chateau, there was a Templar presence there. And I think they were actually working on the earth through their own meditational work, which was having a resonating effect on the earth beneath their feet, so that they were raising the energies, which had, I mean, it's a huge subject, Shari, but this whole business of the fall wasn't just the fall of man, but the subtle energy in the earth actually was pushed down to a level below matter, which means that the different ethers had their corresponding fallen ethers, and the corresponding light ether, the fallen corresponding light ether is electricity. The correspondence of the chemical ether is magnetism, and the life ether, the highest of all, is a force more powerful than nuclear energy. So if you can think of these powerful places having these very strong electromagnetic fallen energies, then it would be possible for the knights, or for people living over them, maybe the druids and the ancient peoples, because of their inner work on themselves, to create a resonating effect on the earth beneath their feet, so they would raise the fallen ethers from electricity, magnetism, and this other force, which Steiner calls the third force, to become the pure higher ethers. Is that very complicated?
I have lots more questions, but we are out of time. From the back of Sylvia Franck's book, The Tree of Life and the Holy Grail, it states, "True Grail knowledge," Franck concludes, "has nothing to do with bloodlines or world status, but is an ancient lifeline to the spiritual origins of creation. Its energetic forces ray up from the earth and down from the constellations and planets while interacting with individual human beings. It holds the key to the fulfillment of mankind's quest, a step to the new phase of human evolution." A fascinating book full of references. Buy it at Amazon or your favorite bookstore, or you can go to our website and look at some of the press releases about this. Sylvia, thank you for writing this book. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Shari. I'm absolutely overwhelmed and terribly grateful to be able to speak with you, because I have such admiration for all that you have done. Thank you, Shari.
We are certainly going to stay in touch, and I want to know more about what you're doing. I see a book for you in bringing all these things together, and we want to be the first to be there with you when that happens.
Bless you, and all the very best for the coming year.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye now.
Bye.